We're going to use the words from the Passover Haggadah to get our chalice lit. I think it's the sign of us all coming together. So before we sing, let's do that. I invite the Grabarek family to come forward to light our chalice now. And as they do, please join me in the words from the Passover Haggadah. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. We're going to share the Passover story, and we need lots of helpers to do that. So we're going to be helped by Michelle Cote, our Director of Religious Education.
Not me.
Not you. Mike, our Music Director, and all of you. When I say, and Moses said to Pharaoh, you're going to reply, let my people go. So let's try it. When Moses said to Pharaoh,
let my people go.
Long ago, the Jewish people were held as slaves in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh, who was the king, made them work very hard and treated them cruelly. A Jewish baby boy was born. His name was Moses. Well, at that time, Pharaoh had ordered that all the Jewish baby boys be killed. But Moses' mother carefully hid him and raised him till he was 3 months old and then put him wrapped up in a basket and floated him down the river. And Moses floated right up to where the Pharaoh's palace was. And the Pharaoh's daughter found him, and she loved him. And she brought him into the Pharaoh's palace, and Moses grew up in there. But when he was older, he found out that he was Jewish. And he realized that it was not right how his people, the Jewish people, were being treated. And at one point, God appeared to Moses in a form of a burning bush, and he told Moses that he was to go and bring the people out of Egypt, his Jewish people. Well, that wasn't so easy. Moses went to Pharaoh, and he said,
let my people go.
But instead of letting them go, things got worse for the Hebrew people. The Pharaoh ordered that the slaves had to make more bricks, and he wouldn't even give them the straw that they needed to make the bricks, but he still expected them to make the bricks. So Moses again went to Pharaoh, and he said,
let my people go.
It wasn't working. So God sent some plagues upon the people of Egypt. And the first thing that happened was Moses was with Pharaoh. He lifted up his staff, and all the water turned to
blood.
And Moses said to Pharaoh,
let my people go.
No way. The next thing that happened was that, there it is, frogs descended upon the people. And with Moses said to Pharaoh,
let my people go.
No way. And then a plague of lice came over the land. and they were all itching. And Moses said to Pharaoh,
"Let my people go."
Still didn't work. Next thing that happened was swarms of flies came upon them. And Moses said to Pharaoh,
"Let my people go."
No way. And then an illness struck the poor livestock, the sheep and the cows, and guess what happened? And Moses said to Pharaoh,
"Let my people go."
No way. And then Moses threw some ashes in the air, and it caused awful boils on people's skin. And Moses said to Pharaoh,
"Let my people go."
Still no way. And the next plague came, and it was great thunder and hail. And Moses said to Pharaoh,
"Let my people go."
And Pharaoh said, "No." No, right. And then upon the land came a plague of locusts. And Moses said to Pharaoh,
"Let my people go."
And still Pharaoh would not relent. And then for 3 days, darkness fell upon the earth. And still Pharaoh would not give in. God then ordered that the firstborn child of the Egyptians would die. And to protect the Jewish children, God told them to put blood above their door so this plague would pass over. See where the word comes? Pass over their houses. And after that plague, Pharaoh finally said that they could leave. And the Jewish people packed up so quickly that they didn't even let their bread that they were making for the trip rise. They cooked it without rising, and that's how we get matzah. Well, Moses then took the people and led him with his staff, and they went right to the edge of the Red Sea. But guess what? Pharaoh changed his mind. He saw that he wasn't liking the fact that he didn't have those slaves anymore. So as they were trying to leave, they were trapped right at the edge of the sea, and Pharaoh with his horses and chariots were coming after him, and Moses held up his staff and parted the water of the sea, and the Hebrew people passed through, and the sea closed up on Pharaoh and his people and covered them up, and the Jewish people won their freedom. Like us to share a time of silence and leading us into the time of this favorite little poem of mine from Mary Oliver. It's entitled Praying. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention, then patch a few words together, and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak. Passover is a week-long holiday that celebrates the Hebrew people's freedom from Egyptian slavery, and it begins on April 14th. It's usually celebrated around a table with a ritual meal called a Seder. And we usually have a Seder here at church, but with this year, with all the construction and the difficulties using Fellowship Hall, we're going to skip that, but hopefully we'll be back next year. But from about the 6th century before the Common Era until the destruction of the Second Temple in the year 70, Passover was also celebrated in the temple. So this morning we're bringing the story of Passover, unfortunately without all the good food, into our worship service. Again, if you will, celebrating it in the temple as it was done over 2,000 years ago. Passover tells the story of the ongoing struggle for freedom and all the complexities of that struggle. Inherent in the Passover message is the assertion that no human should be held subservient to another. The injustice of the Egyptian society of that time was that they failed to recognize what we affirm in our first principle, namely the inherent worth and dignity of every person. To talk about freedom is to talk about equality. Equality is the inseparable companion principle to freedom. If we do not truly believe in the equal worth and dignity of another person whose race or ethnicity or national origin or sexual orientation or religious belief or gender or ableness, to name just some of the categories, is different from our own, then we cannot truly be an advocate for their freedom. In fact, our failure to recognize any one of those people's equal worth and dignity will result in our participation in their oppression. The struggle for freedom was not one that ended with the Exodus story of the Hebrew people 3,000 years ago, but continues today for so many in our world. In our own country, and even in our own community, oppression has not ended. Today, I want to focus on freedom not as something once won and therefore complete, but as something for which we all continue to struggle. I want to look at ways in which some of us may still be oppressed and ways in which we all continue in some ways to oppress others. And I want to begin by digging into that Passover story. You heard the synopsis of it in the message for all ages. You know that the Hebrew people had been slaves in Egypt for a long time. And Moses, who was a person with a foot in two worlds, Hebrew by birth and raised by Pharaoh's daughter, was their leader. He goes to Pharaoh and, as you well know, pleads, "Let my people go." Pharaoh has a good thing going with all these Hebrew slave labor and is not impressed by Moses' pleas for freedom. It's just not in his interest to free the slaves. But then come those horrible 10 plagues, including the locusts and the boils and the frogs, and finally the death of the firstborn Egyptians. And Pharaoh relents, and he says to take your people and go. And at first, the Egyptian people were favorably disposed towards this. They actually gave the parting Hebrews things that they needed for the trip. The Hebrews packed in such a hurry, they knew they needed to go quickly. They baked their bread without allowing it time to rise, and therefore, of course, we have matzah. Well, this brings us in the story to the 14th chapter of Exodus, and I'd like to read you just a little bit of that, what happens next. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the minds of Pharaoh and his officials were changed towards the people, and they said, "What have we done? We've let the Israelites go, and we've lost their services." So he had his chariot made ready, and he took his army with him. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them. As Pharaoh approached the Israelites, looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified, and they cried out. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were not enough graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, just let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve as slaves to the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Well, it seems to me two things happen in this passage. First, Pharaoh goes back on his words. The action of the Pharaoh and the Egyptians does not conform with his declaration of freedom for the Hebrews. The Egyptians' self-interest and gain to to be had from the abuse of these people as slave labor trumps both Pharaoh's promise and any issues of fairness, justice, or equality. The second part of this passage I read addresses the mindset of those who are long denied freedom. In the interest of survival, they are ready to become complacent in their own oppression. When you live with the mind and the culture of an oppressed person, it is easy to quickly lose faith in any promises of freedom. It's even easy to get angry with your liberator. Let's dig a little deeper into Pharaoh's change of heart. The granting of freedom to the Hebrew people did not come about because Pharaoh's enlightened reflection on the inherent worth and dignity of every individual made it happen. Rather, Pharaoh only freed them because of the trouble that this Hebrew God was making with all these plagues. But soon after he granted them freedom, Pharaoh realized that their freedom challenged his privilege. The words of freedom were spoken at best half-heartedly, and self-interest quickly led the Egyptians to ignore them and to try to return the Jews to slavery. And folks, this is not an ancient story, is it? One doesn't have to go back 3,000 years to find this story. In the mid-1800s in this country, the emancipation of black slaves was declared. But if you will, the chariots of Jim Crow, of segregation, of de facto slavery, followed right on its heels, just as Pharaoh followed on the heels of the Hebrew Exodus. It seems to me that we did so, and in some ways continue to do so, largely for the same reasons that Pharaoh went after the Hebrews. And that is that the privilege and self-interest of some was being challenged by the freedom of others. It took another 100 years in a well-organized civil rights movement in our nation to have that proclamation of freedom lead to any sort of real recognition of equality between blacks and whites, and still we have a long way to go. A few weeks ago, I preached to you on a book that some of you are reading together and studying by Michelle Alexander called The New Jim Crow. It focuses on how this new Jim Crow was brought about by the massive incarceration of black men and the way our criminal justice system operates in a racist way. To look at the story of freedom and racial equality in our own land is to come face to face with the uncomfortable issues of the disparity between our declarations of equal worth and dignity for every person, our many laws against discrimination in our society, our court's decisions which clearly proclaim that separate is not equal, and then the reality of where most people of color are in our society today. We're uncomfortable with this discussion because we would like to believe that Americans do not discriminate on the basis of race, that blacks and others who have been oppressed, but who now we declare to be of equal worth and dignity, are in fact treated exactly that way in our society. We want to believe that our experience tells us something different. If we look at our nation, we realize that blacks and other minority groups continue to be systematically ghettoized. Yes, there's been progress, but let's be honest. If you are black in this nation, your chances of going to jail or being the victim of violence or having a child at a way too early age are dramatically greater than if you're white. And your chances of owning a home, of getting a mortgage at a fair rate, of getting a job, of getting a raise, of sending your kids to college, of even getting decent health care are dramatically less. 60 years ago, we ordered desegregation because black schools were dramatically inferior to white. And you know what? They still are. Poor public education continues the cycle of black poverty and fuels that criminal justice system. The income gap between whites and blacks you'd think would be getting smaller. It's not. It's getting wider. And yes, some progress has certainly been made, In our places like our UU churches or maybe in your jobs, we see black doctors and lawyers and professionals, which we never saw before. And of course, we have a black governor and a black president. And perhaps we take these as signs that progress has been made towards racial equality. And of course, it has, and that is true. But come to the city. Come to Roxbury or Dorchester and see how the race card plays there. My intent isn't to weigh you down with a litany of facts, but to make a simple point. It is expressed so well in the words William Faulkner wrote a long time ago. The past isn't dead and buried. It isn't even past. Racism is still with us now in our time, the time after the legal decisions, after the legislation, and after the proclamations of equality. The question for us is, are we acting in a way that is true to those proclamations of freedom and justice, or are we acting like Pharaoh? For racism to end, we have to let go of our privilege, some of our self-interest, and so often we are not really ready to do that. In New York Harbor is perhaps the greatest symbol of freedom, the Statue of Liberty, which proclaims at its base, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." We proclaim, it's our image, that we are the land where the oppressed come to find all that freedom. But let's think, how do we really treat our immigrants, both those who arrive with proper documentation and those who don't? It strikes me again, with respect to our immigrant communities, our response has been much like Pharaoh's. I don't want your freedom to challenge my job or to cost me money. We may give lip service, for instance, to rights for migrant workers or for the immigrants who mow our lawns or clean our houses, but we don't want the price to go up. Just look at how difficult it's been even to get our Congress to consider raising the minimum wage, which I don't think anybody would debate here that the fact that no one could live on the current minimum wage. Truth be told, these migrant farm workers and factory workers, service industry workers, fast food workers, chambermaids do not have the freedom that we do. And they do not have it because giving it to them might make us just a bit less privileged. It might cost us a bit of money. Those are not the only folks that are oppressed, whose inherent worth and dignity is not recognized, and who therefore don't enjoy the freedom that others do. There still is actual slavery in our world. Children are captured and sent into slavery. Women are sold into slaves to the sex trade. This year we had a group, a service focused around the group that supports an organization that assists women and or victims of human trafficking. The plight of women in many areas of the world and the increasing attacks on the rights of gays and lesbian folks in places like Russia and Africa are examples of the way that freedom is being denied right now. And let's take this out of the national and world stage and look at the issue of oppression much closer to home. Domestic abuse is a form of oppression. Now, we've heard about it in the extreme. We've heard the horror stories of women who have been locked in the basement for 20 years and subject to constant abuse and denied any kind of freedom. But there are oppressed women and men and children right in our own community. They're less visible, perhaps not as extreme cases, but they're still very much denied freedom. And the voices of the abused, whether it's abuse from domestic violence or economic abuse of migrant workers, are often just drowned out by the mantra, "We're the land of freedom and equality." Those in the oppressed place are like the Hebrews who were chased by Pharaoh and said, "We should have kept our mouths shut and been good slaves at least we would still have something. You know, we see this all the time. Abused women are afraid to leave terrible situations because they are afraid they will not be able to support themselves and their family. Ridiculously low-paid workers are afraid to ask for a raise or to work towards unionizing for fear that they will have no jobs. So many who are oppressed, who don't really have freedom, just can't raise their voices. The consequences of doing so are too great. The consequences to challenge those who benefit from their oppression is too extreme. And of course, if we look beyond our own shores, we see freedom denied in many places. And we see that same fear in the oppressed people, that fear to even raise the issue, to buy into their own oppression. There's an election going on in Afghanistan right now, and it's reported that in many areas people are excited about voting. But in areas where the Taliban is really strong, people will not vote because the Taliban will look at their hands. And if there's the blue ink mark from the election polling place on their hands that tells them that they voted, then they'll kill them. They're like the Hebrews in the Exodus story. The price of freedom is too high, so don't say anything because we at least have something. And isn't that the story of those also who make our clothes in Asian sweatshops? Isn't that the story of those, especially women, who live under Taliban rule? Isn't that the story of gay men and women in Russia, or worse, in African countries that have now made being gay a capital offense? So do you see why it's important that we retell the Passover story each year? We do so to remind ourselves that still real freedom is denied to many, that freedom is an ongoing struggle. We do so to remind us to examine our role as privileged individuals who regularly benefit by the unfair treatment of others. We do so to resolve that we will not be part of the oppression, but that we will do what we can to uphold the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The great civil rights leader, I don't know if you remember her, Fannie Lou Hamer, she spoke at the Democratic Convention in the 60s. She was from the challenging Mississippi delegation. She put it this way: nobody is free unless everybody is free. Some here have known and still may know oppression. Everyone here has benefited from the labor of some who have been treated unfairly. We have lots of proclamations about freedom, but we really don't know what it truly feels like to be free when there are those close at hand and far away who are held back, denied opportunity, abused, oppressed, even still made slaves. You know, at the end of the Passover Seder, the words, "This year we celebrate here, but next year in Jerusalem," are spoken. I believe those words are words of hope. Jerusalem is not so much a place as an ideal, not a physical location. But it's the place within us and among us where justice, peace, and freedom abide. To be in Jerusalem, everyone must be free. Our Passover pledge, regardless of what tradition we come from, has to be to do what we can to bring that reality closer, so we can indeed know what it would feel like to truly be free.